It's time for Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
Hi, Phil Goff, Mayor of Auckland City, the super city.
Yeah, here I am, as
you
said.
Looking
at the city and saying, hey, we're 3 or 4 days off summer. Where is it? It's warm enough, but had enough of the rain.
3 or 4 days off officially, are we?
Yeah, yep. December the 1st. What day is December the 1st? It's on Saturday.
Saturday,
we're officially in summer.
Oh, fantastic.
So, hey, bring on the sunshine.
Get swimming, or is the water too filthy?
The water's going to be better all the time, and all you've got to do is look at SwimSafe, and you'll see on your app whether it's great to swim at a place or whether you shouldn't be swimming because it's just poured down with rain and the stormwater has overflowed into the wastewater and it's done nasty things to our beaches, and it's been doing that for far too long, and that's why we're addressing that problem.
So we're addressing the problem at the cause. Like, stopping people hosing their crap into the stormwater drains, is it just an inevitable sort of the leaching of certain things as it washes off? Like, you know, as cars drive past buildings, they spew their filth onto the side of a building. When the rain hits the building, it washes the filth down into the road, and from the road to the stormwater, to the stormwater to the ocean. That sort of thing.
It's a whole lot of things. I mean, the main problem in our Western Isthmus area is when they built the houses, they connected the stormwater straight into the wastewater. So every time you get a heavy rain pour, it flows into our wastewater pipes. They overflow, 60 or 70 different overflow points around the city and go straight into the harbour. So what are we doing there? We're building a big central interceptor, which starts about between March and May next year. And that's like a massive holding tank, but also a tunnel through to Mangere. And that will absorb 90% of the overflow risk in that area. We've got to clean up the water that comes off our roads, so we've got to have filtration ponds. We've got to store the stormwater so it doesn't just doesn't flood out all at once, and we're doing that with massive holding tanks around the city. We've got to clean up our septic tanks, and we've introduced a program to do that. We've got to stop the broken pipe syndrome where you get wastewater flowing into stormwater.
Yep.
And we're doing that all over the place. So, hey, you know, there's literally billions of dollars being invested in this, but at the end of the decade, we will have wiped out 90% of the problem, and then we'll tackle the last 10%. But
at the coalface, what can the Aucklander do to do their part?
Well, the critical thing is not to flush bad stuff down into your wastewater pipes or your stormwater drains. You know, we still get occasions.
We're all good for poos and wees, though, aren't we?
Yeah. Look, there's still some nutcases out there that would pour oil down a stormwater drain, you know, when they've changed the oil on their car. And, yeah, fortunately, it doesn't happen so often now, but, you know, that culture's got to be totally abandoned. And we've just got to treasure the beaches, the 1,000 beaches that we have around Auckland, because that's part of, you know, swimming at those beaches is part of our birthright. And we're bringing that back. 4 beaches in the Manukau Harbour in the last month that have been closed for 20 years are now open for swimming, and that's a massive improvement.
Yeah, that's great. We went down to that little sort of pretendy beach that's been made over the motorway in Onehunga there.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's Tomanu. Yeah,
yeah.
That's fantastic. I worked on that when I was local MP there with a guy called Jim Jackson, who was a major force behind it, and the local board, and we turned basically rock-strewn, almost a tip face on the edge of the harbour into beautiful beaches.
It's really, really cool.
I'm not going to
go for a swim there just yet, but I mean, it's...
But it's one of the beaches. It's one of the beaches that we've reopened, Tomanu East, that was previously closed. You know, from time to time, we'll still have incidents that occur, but we want to vastly reduce those, because you can't talk about being clean, green, 100% pure and then say, hey, every time it rains, you know, 60 of your beaches around Auckland aren't proper to swim in. So,
exactly.
You know, but Onehunga Bay, Tomanu, is a great example of how, you know, a landscape that had been destroyed because we'd put tips along the coastal front of the Manukau there at Pikes Point and at Waikowhai. We'd infilled a lot of the area. We'd put a motorway across it. It was a disaster, and we've turned it back into a beautiful place for people to visit. We need to do more of that.
Is it an ecosystem now?
It's an ecosystem now, but it's great for recreation as well. So alongside the nesting birds, you can go swimming in the beaches. You can launch your boat there.
Solid
you can
skateboard
sail
ramp.
In the lagoon. Yeah. It's a good news story, and we need a whole lot more of those.
It's amazing too. You go along there; people really respect it too. People really respect the fact that there's been some work put in there because it's clean, it's tidy, and
fortunately. Where you make a place a beautiful place, you know, it goes against people's instincts to start to degrade it. There are still the hopeless, trying to think of a non-expletive word, people out there that dump their rubbish, that litter around the city. You know, we've got to change our culture still. There's a whole lot of work we need to do in that space, but what I'm really pleased about is that we should have a very high level of infringement notices against people dumping their rubbish, and we've had three important prosecutions recently, and one of those prosecutions, we're still waiting for the sentencing, but is going to result in a pretty severe penalty.
Speaking of culture, we have been, it's been announced that New Zealand, that Auckland has become internationally recognised
City of Music.
Yes,
we're one of about, I think there's only about 31 of them in the world. There's a UNESCO has a lot of, you know, you can be a city of literature, city of music, but we won the right to call ourselves the City of Music.
Firstly, UNESCO are the United Nations Educational, Scientific and Cultural Organisation.
Hardly anybody says that whole thing. They just say UNESCO.
Just in case people don't know, you know.
Yeah. No, good to have it out there. You know, what that reflects is that we are a city where we can pride ourselves on our musical output. You know, the musicians we've produced, the Māori, the tangata whenua component of that, the Pacifica component, and this is a way of promoting music, promoting up-and-coming talent, and also leveraging off that reputation as a place where people want to visit. You know, we do have a good culture here in Auckland, and our musicians have been first rate. You know, produce people like Lord, for heaven's sake, and Don McGlashan. We ought to be proud of those people and build on that tradition and build on our reputation.
I'm going to throw a couple of comments at you that have come up since that announcement. Where's the support by council for venue owners? There should be more venues opening on a yearly basis. The positive outcomes as a result of such spaces is immense, yet we don't seem to see any value in it. The council will be the first to herald some small form of success in the arts, yet will not fund or support the spaces which create this. We can't just expect the arts and dance community to thrive. Why is it up to the promoters of the city to cultivate culture? Auckland City Council stop running with this bullshit line that it's a UNESCO City of Music? You can't dance past 4 a.m. and every year we lose venues due to some moral panic-based liquor laws and neighbours complaining about noise. There's more to culture than the ballet. It's even worse for Indigenous communities, people of colour. Less funding the opera and more funding our communities to create our own identity. And someone said the opening yesterday was full of empty rhetoric.
Oh, actually, all of the feedback I got from the opening, which was last week, was fantastic. Is it just about opera? Of course not. It's about every aspect of culture and every group. And, you know, I think the notable thing, we had a wonderful brother and sister couple performing at the opening. They were Tongan. And she was a student, an engineering student. He was a teacher. And their performance just wowed everybody. So for anybody that said it was a hopeless opening, that did not reflect the mood of absolute celebration that took place.
Empty rhetoric was the most cutting term there.
That's bullshit too. You know, we're putting $85 million a year into the culture and heritage of this city. $85 million. That's not rhetoric. That's hard cash.
Do you think there's any merit to the comments that we're closing too many venues down and that the 4 o'clock closing thing isn't making any difference at all? In fact, it's making things a little more difficult for people.
Well, you know, I don't know. It's been a long time since I've danced at 4 o'clock or at any time of the day, actually.
It's the best time to dance.
Yeah. Well, so a lot of younger people tell me, I don't get a stream of correspondence across my desk saying that is a big problem.
But you must be aware that we don't have a lot of small performance venues in Auckland City.
Yeah, but look, it's not up to the council to do what
if we're going to be, if we're lucky enough to be considered a, you know, UNESCO, you know, City of Music or whatever it is. What is it?
UNESCO City of Music.
Then, you know, we should be at the grassroots level fostering those people that are making the music and giving them places to perform their music and places, you know, the right places for people to come and see them and not be restricted by ridiculous laws that somebody's thought up just because they want to have less police on the shift. You know?
Yeah. Look, I don't know that there's any prohibition on dancing after 4 o'clock. There are a closure of outlets selling liquor and providing entertainment at that time, and that's a decision that's been made, and it was a compromise decision. The police wanted it, I think, at 2 o'clock in the morning, and some people didn't want it at all.
It was a decision that was made by a whole lot of false information that the police used from a non-existent study apparently in Sydney.
Well, I you know, this happened before my time.
I'm just saying, that might be worth a look into.
I can't give you the ins and outs on it, but hey, look, there's nothing.
It sounds like something great to be involved in, you know, and I hope that. Yeah. My hope is that the in a year's time, say, we really feel like a UNESCO City of Music, you know, because
I think, you know, just having that brand and having that reputation and then building up to make sure that you're supporting that reputation is critically important. But does that mean council has to provide every venue and provide every gig there is around? Of course
no,
not.
No. I don't mean that, but it does. A lot of it does come down to council approval, council backing, you know, like and saying, yeah, we're good to have something there. Be good, yeah, and I guess council's decision making when it comes to people making protests just for the sake of protests, you know.
Yeah, well, you know, there are process where those things get worked through, and you know, the people can make submissions, people can have their voice heard. You know, strangely enough, in our community, there are often different and sometimes conflicting points of view, and the council, in some occasions, has to be the arbiter over that. Many times they get it right, sometimes they get it wrong, and if you can demonstrate to me that we've got it wrong in a material way, there, that's fine. But, you know, I suppose the obvious thing I'd have to add there, we can do so much, but we can only do what we can do with the money that you, the residents and the ratepayers, provide us.
And the information that we provide you as well.
And that information is important. That's why it's kind of ironic at the local government level, and I can say this having been a central government politician for most of my life, we are under far more requirements of consultation forced on us by central government than central government ever deems appropriate to apply to itself. So sometimes we consult people to death.
So let's talk parades, Phil. Let's talk parades. What happened with what are we at with the Pride Parade, and then what happened with the Santa Parade? Santa Parade.
Yeah, Santa Parade, I was all set to. I go on the walking school bus. I walk. We don't sit on. I don't sit in the car and wave regally. I just travel
like
with John the kids.
Banks,
with
John Banks used to do that.
Yeah. I haven't got the Daimler car anymore.
That situation.
Yeah, but look, Santa Parade cancelled last week because of wet weather. On again this Sunday, I think at 1 o'clock, weather permitting. God knows with our city about the weather. A bit of a fuss over, you know, is Santa a man or a woman? Generally, it's been a man, but I've seen women fulfilling the role of Santa at shopping centres and things like that. You know, I don't think there has to be a hard and fast rule. I'm not quite sure why the committee organising it decided that they needed to sack the guy that suggested that it had to be a man. It was a point of view. I thought that was a bit of a harsh response, but somebody needs to talk to Michael Barnett about that. It's not our decision. Pride Parade's been great. And it's really disappointing to see the amount of dissent and disagreement that's happening. My personal view is I thought it was great having the soldiers.
Well, that dissent and disagreement essentially turns it into some sort of getting closer to being a straight parade, isn't it? Well, the sort of thing you expect from a regular parade.
I thought that what the Pride Parade was celebrating was inclusiveness, and I thought it was a great step forward to have groups like the police and the Defence Force saying, hey, you can be gay or straight in any part of our community, in any occupation, and we accept everybody, whatever their sexual orientation is, that's their right, and we will uphold it. And that was the message I took from it. So, look, I'm not in the organising committee. It's not my place to say what they should and shouldn't do, but I hope they get their act together, because it's really sad seeing what was a great parade celebrating the diversity of our city and a great event to go to descending into conflict. And I hope they can sort that one out, because, you know, it's disappointing to see what's happened there.
All right, Phil, thank you very much. Speak to you again this time next week.
Okay, mate. Take care. Bye-bye. Good as gold. Talk to you then.
Cheers. Bye-bye. That was Sounding Off with Phil Goff.